Hey, what's up? John Doherty here for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully, ever striving to be fact-based, open to divergent perspectives, and always actively optimistic. Today we're talking with Emily Moore, who is a senior researcher with the Sightline Institute in Seattle. Along with many other folks advocating for cleaner electrification, I've become aware of the challenge of transporting that cleaner electricity from where it's produced to where it's needed. Emily Moore recently published a paper, Northwest States Need to Build New Power Lines Fast, Otherwise Oregon and Washington Will Miss Critical Climate Targets. I recommend you finding the paper on the Sightline Institute's website. The problem is very real, yet it's under the public's radar. I, like many, tend to take electricity for granted. I turn on the lights or plug something in, call for warmer or cooler temperature in my house, and presto, it happens. Yet the infrastructure and policies of production and transportation are complex in many ways, including political. This conversation with Emily Moore will go a ways to helping us understand the challenge. And so here we go with part one of a conversation with Emily Moore. So we're with Emily Moore today. She's a senior researcher at Seattle Sightline Institute. Emily, it's so good to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much, John. It's great to be here.
So we're talking about a subject that can be a little obscure, but it turns out it's really critically important. The big picture, what we want to talk about today is long-distance electricity transmission, what problems exist, and what are we going to do about those problems? So before we jump into those issues specifically, I would like to know a little bit about the Sightline Institute. So how did Sightline come to be, and what is its purpose?
Sure. So Sightline's purpose is to make Cascadia, or the Pacific Northwest, a global model of sustainability. So we're a nonprofit think tank, and what that means is that we do a lot of in-depth research and writing, all with an eye toward advocating for state and local policies in Washington, Oregon, British Columbia, and the entire region that can help build strong communities, a green economy, and a healthy environment. We were founded 30 years ago. We're coming up on our 30-year birthday. And we work on three big issues in the region, housing, democracy, and climate, all of which we think contribute to a more sustainable future.
Yeah, so that's a beautiful mission and and just such critically important areas to look at. So you did mention that you're nonprofit. So one of the things I wonder about nonprofits, like, okay, where does the money come from?
Sure. Well, we have an amazing network of supporters who I think also are inspired by Sightline's mission. So that includes many individuals, regular people who may contribute what they can, and then also some foundations or larger funders who are particularly focused on sustainability or maybe one of those topics that I mentioned.
Okay, so for folks out there that are interested in their tax returns, is Sightline a 501c3 or something like that?
We are. We're a 501c3. We're actually in the middle of our fall fund drive right now. So, yes, coming up on the end of the year. That's a great plug. I wasn't intending but thank you, John.
Yeah, no, we'll be sure. We'll put show notes up, and we'll have a place where people can click through. And one of the things that gives me assurances about organizations that are 501c3 is that by law, you're pretty much required to be educational as opposed to advocating. So, I mean, I think that sometimes there's a little bit of a gray line between those two, but you're an organization that's out there trying, the way I understand it, trying to get stuff to folks in a usable, understandable way for policymakers and voters and all those kind of things. So that seems like a terrific mission in life. So that's about Sightline. What about Emily? How did Emily end up in Sightline? And you're up in Seattle, so I'm a kind of like a hardcore Pacific Northwesterner. So is Seattle is Pacific Northwest your home?
It's my adopted home. I am in Seattle, as you said. I actually grew up in the Bay Area and then lived on the East Coast for quite a while and then moved here just 2 years ago. So part of what actually drew me to Sightline was the focus on the regional policies, local, state, and regional policies, because it's been a fantastic way to really get to know organizations in the area, advocates, feel, you know, rooted in my new-ish home now. But I lead Sightline's fossil fuel transition program. And what we do in that program, which is kind of under the umbrella of the climate work, is we fight against polluting facilities that may have been proposed for the in the Pacific Northwest that might include oil pipelines, coal terminals, all kinds of dirty projects. And increasingly, we're starting to look at trying to build up the infrastructure that we need to actually accelerate that clean energy transition. So kind of two sides of the same coin. And the transmission topic that we'll get into today fits into that latter half where, you know, we're not just saying no to things, we need to start saying yes to things too. But as for why I joined Sightline, other reasons I joined Sightline, I was really drawn to some of what you were describing in terms of the in-depth, sharp, I think, original analysis on really important topics. We're a very small team. We're 20 people. And I think we do a good job. I mean, if I can toot our own horn at focusing on policies or topic areas that have the highest potential to address some of the biggest issues of our day, because we have to be really focused given our limited capacity. So that was exciting to me. And of course, the urgency of the climate crisis was one of the biggest reasons I joined Sightline. And an added bonus, I think, was the wonderful group of colleagues that I've met who are all very passionate, interested in the areas that they work on and so much more, and they're all spread out across the Pacific Northwest. So we have folks here in Seattle, but also some folks down in Portland, Alaska, Montana. So we're kind of spread out in the region.
Yeah, and just a quick aside, you had mentioned BC just a little earlier too, and mm-hmm. I'm always pleased when I see us in conversation with our next door neighbors, British Columbia. Mm-hmm. It seems like that border sometimes is a bigger barrier than it needs to be. And it's a beautiful province. I've spent a lot of time up there. So I'm glad they're part of what you look at. And of course, the climate and the environment and related things pay no attention to international or any other kind of boundaries as far as that goes. So that's good. So you recently wrote an article, and I'm going to quote the title of the article: Northwest states need to build new power lines fast, otherwise Oregon and Washington will miss critical climate targets. And by the way, I'm going to put a link to that article in our show notes too, because I really recommend that the depth of that article goes beyond what we're going to be able to do today. But, you know, it's also layperson accessible so that the average person can read and understand what's going on and what the challenges are. So you said we're going to miss some critical climate targets and that we need more power lines. Okay, let's just start off. So why do we need more power lines?
Sure. So you've touched on an important thing, I think, to cover first, which is definitions. Just in case people aren't familiar with what we're talking about when we say transmission lines. So transmission lines are those big power lines, as you were saying, that you might see. I've seen them when I go on a hike across mountaintops, or along highways in certain areas. But basically what they do is they carry electricity over long distances from wherever it's generated to cities or towns or population centers that use it. So they hook up to the power lines you might see in your neighborhood, which are called distribution lines. So that's on definitions. But to understand why electric transmission is so important, I think it's worth backing up and thinking about what are two of the most fundamental pillars or things we need to do in order to meet our climate goals, which are pretty well accepted, I think, at this point. And those two things are, one, clean up how we make our electricity, and then two, electrify just about everything that we can. So that means, of course, cars, stoves, furnaces, anything that's right now running on dirty fossil fuels. We amazingly have the technology now to be able to use electricity, but we're going to need that electricity to come from clean sources. So those two are interconnected, and there's going to be an increase in demand, of course, for electricity because of all that. So transmission is fundamental to both of those pillars. It kind of underpins both of them. And as you said, I did some research. I've been doing some research for Sightline. And if folks are interested, you can go to sightline.org/transmission to read more. But I've mostly focused on why here in Oregon and Washington, we need transmission for that first pillar, which is cleaning up the grid. And kind of at the most basic level, the reason that we need more transmission is that the best wind and solar resources in our region are located east of the Cascades, even potentially a little bit outside of our region. So we have, there's very strong wind power in Montana, Wyoming, and most of the electricity, though, is consumed here in Seattle or Tacoma or Portland west, in the western areas. So we need transmission lines to carry that clean power over much longer distances than we've needed in the past, because in the past, if we were relying on natural gas power plants or coal-fired power plants, or even hydroelectric dams, those were often much closer, or still are much closer to population centers. So this new kind of distance to be able to tap into those high quality wind and solar resources is why we need more transmission. Or rather, I should say, it's why transmission is important. The reason we need more of it is because our grid is in many ways full. It's at capacity. So the big electric utilities like Puget Sound Energy or Portland General Electric, they by and large don't have transmission lines that can reach that far. They were developed in an era where the understanding was that the electric system was a lot more local. And so they weren't developed with long range transmission lines. Now, certainly they have some, but not to the extent that this energy transition requires. There is one player, and I'm covering a lot of ground on this question, but there is one big player in the Pacific Northwest that does have that reach, and that's the Bonneville Power Administration, so BPA as they're commonly known. And we can certainly talk a lot more about them, but just to summarize, they're a federal agency, and they own 75% of the transmission lines in the Pacific Northwest. So they're really the big, big player in this. And what that means is that a lot of utilities or renewable developers, wind and solar projects, they want to hook onto Bonneville's grid in order to span those long distances. But the grid is pretty backed up. So especially on certain routes, east to west across the Cascades being a big one, BPA doesn't have more transmission capacity to be able to offer to folks who are trying to get hooked up to it. So I'll pause there. I know I'm talking about a lot of different things, so you might have follow-up questions on that. But in summary, we need to get access to these great wind and solar projects. We're actually seeing an explosion of projects, new development, wind and solar development, but without the power lines to be able to bring that new clean power across the Cascades or to the big population centers that need to use it, I think there's a big risk that we might not meet our climate targets.
Well, no, that's really an outstanding summary of what the need is. And my layperson short version is we've got clean energy east of the mountains and we've got population centers west of the mountains. And right now we don't have the infrastructure to get that energy over here to the population centers where it's needed. So That's pretty clear, and I think it's understandable by everybody, because if your conduit is not big enough to carry the load, then you've got a problem. So one of the things in the title of your paper, you said that we need it fast too. So there's some time urgency here, it sounds like. So what's that about?
Sure, yes. Much of the climate story is one of urgency at this point, but so I'll again kind of back us up a little bit to looking at two of the most important climate policies that we have in Oregon and Washington, which both touch on one of those things I mentioned earlier, which is cleaning up our electricity sources. So I had said they're kind of those two big pillars of climate policy that we need to have. We need to clean up our electricity sources and we need to electrify everything. So the good news is that the legislatures in both Washington and Oregon recently passed policies that get at that first pillar. So they are requiring electric utilities to clean up their generating sources. So basically, to stop burning coal and natural gas to generate electricity. So those policies are fantastic, but they're also going to re require quite rapid and significant change on the part of many electric utilities. So just to get a little more specific, in Oregon, that policy is called HB 2021, and that was passed last year. And it requires investor-owned electric utilities to zero out their emissions by 2040. And there's some interim targets up until 2040. Now, PGE, Portland General Electric, is the biggest electric utility in Oregon. And they have said that in order to meet HB 2021's interim 2030 target, they'll have to triple their renewable resources. So that just gives you a sense of how mammoth of a change we're talking about here. And then here in Washington, it's a similar story. So our legislature passed the Clean Energy Transformation Act in 2019, known as CETA. And that again requires electric utilities to rely on 100% carbon-free generation by 2045. So there's some slight nuanced differences between the two states, but in both of them, we need to stop burning, and the electric utilities are required to stop burning coal and natural gas and phase that down. In fact, in Washington, they have to stop using coal by 2025. So that's just 3 years away. And here, Puget Sound Energy is our biggest electric utility, and they derived half of their electricity from fossil fuels in 2020, mostly from gas, and only 10% came from wind and solar. And they're saying that to meet the 2045 target in Washington, they have to increase their renewable resources by 500%. So big changes are required by these laws, which is good. Like we absolutely need that, but the, you know, so why the urgency? Back to your question, those targets are 2040, 2045. Maybe it seems like we've got time. Problem is that transmission lines can take 10 or even 20 years to build. So when you start thinking on that time frame, you realize we don't have that kind of time, in order to, you know, ensure access to those renewable resources at the scale and pace that is required by law.
So let's break right here. Our next Climate Talk episode will bring part two of this important conversation with Emily Moore as she helps us as laypersons to understand the challenges and promises of a cleaner energy system and how important transport of that cleaner energy is to our future and how far we have to go to get there. You can contact me at john@ccltacoma.org for comments on this program or to make suggestions for future programs. The CCL part is for Citizens Climate Lobby. I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby. Check it out. A bunch of good people. Join up or find another organization if you aren't already attached to join your voice with others. This program, along with all the other locally produced Radio Tacoma programs, can be found on the KTAH website under Programming. So until we talk again, remember that all great victories were almost great defeats, and always live like the mountain is out. Take care now.